Good. We're all good.
All right. So welcome to those on Zoom. Welcome to those watching on Facebook for another episode of The Schmooze. So tonight we have a few very special guests with us. First of all, big thank you to Bianca for putting this together and for this idea. And to all of our guest speakers, this is going to be a fascinating discussion about Judaism in Dubai. So we all know about Dubai now in the past few months. It's been in the news. New rabbis, kosher restaurants, you know, all different types of exciting things happening there Jewishly. But I don't think it was always like that. But what was always there, there were always Jews living there for many years. And tonight we're going to hear from a few of those special families who lived there when it wasn't so in style to be Jewish in Dubai, and it definitely wasn't as easy. So it's definitely fascinating for me personally. I always grew up hearing stories about people being Jewish in far off places and secret, and you know, being scared and, you know, having to sort of hide it. But I've never actually met someone like that. So it's definitely very exciting. So what we're going to do is I'm going to ask different questions to our various guests, and as well as to my father, Rabbi Gerari. I'm Rabbi Levi Gerari from Bina, for those who don't know me. My father's Rabbi Gerari, and I'll ask him also questions as well, even though I don't believe he was ever in Dubai, as far as I know. But there's always something. Judaism always has what to say about everything. So we'll ask him from his perspective as well. So we're going to start from, we're going to start with Mia, who I believe is in England. You can unmute yourself. Why did you go to Dubai in the first instance? Definitely not on my destination list. I'm wondering why it was on yours. And how did you make Jewish connections there?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Rabbi. And thanks so much to all of you for giving us the opportunity to speak to you all today. I think all of us on the panel would certainly insist on making it clear that we weren't the only contributors to building this community, this very special community. But certainly we have some really good stories to share today. Can you hear me, Rabbi?
Yeah.
Can I just double check?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So good question. Why did I go in the first place? And I think, you know, objectively speaking, you know, on paper, it did seem like a bit of an odd decision for a single Jewish female at that stage, age 32, who'd grown up in a relatively Orthodox household with very strong Jewish identity and very strong connection to Israel. I'd grown up in Zionist youth organizations and so on and so forth. To make a decision to move to essentially a Muslim world where being Jewish publicly at that time, you know, I'd go as far to say as it wasn't possible. So to my immediate circle, my family and my friends and also my community at that time, it did seem a bit strange. I think they thought I was a bit crazy. And just to emphasize, I mean, you know, when I say it wasn't publicly possible, you know, when you applied for a work visa there, you had to select religion, and they didn't actually even have Jewish as an option on the drop-down menu. So although I told my firm at the time to select not applicable, for some reason they selected Catholic. So I ended up being Catholic for 3.5 years. And I'm sure I can talk a bit more about that a bit later. So why did I go? I mean, on the surface, I suppose I went primarily for work, career progression. It wasn't just that. I'd been out on a meet see. I'd been to go and see Dubai and meet people in the office in the firm that I was then working for. And I went in December 2009, and the only people I knew in Dubai were actually Simon and Sharon Eder, who are Sharon is also on the panel today. And they'd moved there in 2008. I'd actually grown up with them. And they said, you know, come and stay, come and see it. We'll show you around and so on and so forth. And I remember Simon picked me up from the airport, and we were sort of driving through the streets or driving through the main busy roads and so on. I could see all these fantastic structures. And then we pulled up to the Jumeirah Beach residence, which was soon to become my home. where Sharon and Simon lived, and it was this mile-long stretch of really lovely residential apartments, literally on the beach. And I know for those of you in Sydney, the hot weather and the beach probably isn't, you know, necessarily such a novelty, but for me, from rainy, cold, windy London, you know, I just thought this was fantastic. And there were some great shops and so on and so forth. And I thought, well, lifestyle-wise, this could be great, could be great career progression for me. It's not necessarily, you know, it's not going to be a very Jewish experience. That's what I thought. And I said to Simon and Sharon at the time, do you know any other Jews living in Dubai? My Jewish identity has always been really important to me. And we're, you know, we're from a very traditional family, as I said, relatively Orthodox. And I said, do you know any other Jews? And the only other Jews they knew at that stage were Rana and Giacomo Arazi, and vice versa for Rana and Giacomo. And they said, actually, we're going there for Shabbos dinner this evening. So I was obviously very excited about that. And I remember we pulled up to Rana and Giacomo's villa, which was in a place called Sakim. I think it was kind of surrounded by about five mosques, something like that, within walking distance of the villa, which is understandable. You know, it's an Arabic, the Emirates is an Arabic set of Emirates. And I was a bit nervous about Friday night dinner. I was really excited, but a little bit nervous, if I'm honest. And Giacomo made Kiddush and so on. And I did feel there was a little bit of discomfort, because I was, you know, we were definitely doing the right thing. We were expressing our Judaism. We were doing the right thing. But I just wasn't sure that it was safe, honestly, at that stage. I'd never been to Dubai before. But Sharon and Simon and Rana and Jacqueline were so relaxed about everything. So I kind of thought, okay, I'll just go with the flow here. And I guess I just, you know, resigned myself once I'd come home from that meet see. I just resigned myself to the idea that it wasn't, if I go, it's going to be short-term contract. It's not going to be a particularly Jewish experience. It will be a personal challenge, you know, being Jewish in a Muslim world. It will certainly be a personal challenge. I'd never really experienced, I'd traveled all over the world. I went to Melbourne University for 5 months. I've been to Sydney as well, about four times. I've been all over the world at that stage, but I'd never really kind of had any experiences in any Arabic countries. So I thought it would be a personal challenge, you know. And so that's primarily why I went. Little did I know, and you'll hear more about this later, that this villa that Rana and Giacomo lived in would, you know, soon be the place of many Jewish events. And I think the rest of the panel, including Rana, can tell you a bit more about that later. So, you know, as I said, I resigned myself to the fact it wasn't going to be a very Jewish experience. And I was very wrong, as you'll hear. How did I make Jewish connections? How did we make Jewish connections? So amazingly, I moved permanently in February 2010. And within the first few weeks, I was at a brunch with a friend of mine. And he said to me, you know that there's actually, there's a Jewish couple here, you know, and I was really quite surprised. And he introduced me to this Jewish couple, Robin and Robin, fondly known today still as Boy Robin and Girl Robin. And I was speaking to Robin and Robin about, you know, living in Dubai as Jews. And, you know, Girl Robin said, it's not easy. They've been there since 2008. And I said, well, I'm going to my friends Simon and Sharon for Shabbos dinner tonight, Friday night dinner. You know, I really want to introduce you to them. And they said, interesting. They said, we know another couple doing what you're doing tonight. And this was Bianca and Derek Hershovitz. And eventually, Rana and Giacomo and Simon and Sharon, myself, Bianca, Derek, and also Michael and Martine, we all became connected. We were introduced to Michael and Martine Nates, also on the panel, through mutual friends of Bianca and Derek's. And once we all became connected, certainly there was Jewish activity before 2010, but I think in terms of community, a regular community and meeting regularly, that's probably when it all kind of kicked off.
Wow, that's fascinating. You mentioned Sharon, so Sharon's with us tonight as well. So you were in Dubai, I believe, from 2008 to 2014. How did the community developed from 2010. And can you talk a little bit about arranging for Chabad rabbis to join you there for events, and what did they do there for the community?
So just to give a little bit of background, my husband and I moved to Dubai in 2008. We'd both grown up, so I come from a Sephardi family. My husband's Ashkenazi, but we had strong Jewish identities. So I'd been to a Jewish nursery, Jewish day school all the way through. For my parents, especially my father, who'd escaped Iraq, he wasn't very keen. I remember him saying, "Why would you go and be a stranger in a stranger's land? But similar to me, we'd lived abroad. I'd lived in China for many years, kept my identity, and I wanted this experience. I think there was also part of me that could never go to my parents' homeland. My mother had left Libya, my father had left Iraq, and there was part of me who wanted to understand where they had come from and their identity, however removed it was. I think before we left, we were introduced to the Arazi family from three different people. So we thought they were three separate families, but they were one wonderful family. And they used to invite us every Shabbat. And I think that was really a linchpin for us, because it was a structure that we had to the week. I think what changed for us was in 2010, when I fell pregnant. Up until then, if it was any major chagim, we would fly to Israel or to London. But in 2010, being happy in Dubai, I think that was a real line for us, because we had our identity, but how were we going to give our child that identity in the desert? Was it fair not to give the child what we had? By that point, like Mia described, we'd already made Jewish connections and we'd started to get together. And with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur coming up, we decided we wanted to do something more. A chance visit to Sri Lanka at the Pesach before in 2010, we went to the Chabad house. And the Chabad rabbi there said, "This is really strange, because I've had guests coming in for years, but last week I had someone from Abu Dhabi come in, which is a neighboring emirate." And he thought it was fate, and he connected us. And he actually helped us bring the rabbis out. And they came, and the first Yom Kippur service was held at Derek and Bianca's house. And it was incredibly, Bianca will talk about this more, but it was incredibly emotional for us. It was an amazing thing that we created, and it gave us a lot of strength and brought us together. After that, I think we regularly had the rabbis come out, or different rabbis, and we celebrated all the chagim together, bringing in each other's rituals, which we'll go on to explain. I think the marker, I don't want to go on for too long, to show how much we developed was in 2012, so 2 years later, when I was pregnant for the second time. We decided that whether I was going to have a boy or a girl, we would stay in Dubai, have the baby, and we were confident that with the strength of the community, we could have a Brit Milah, which we eventually did, with a Mohel coming in from South Africa.
That is amazing. Wow. I'll apologize in advance if I pronounce anyone's names incorrectly. It's not one of my strong points. So I believe it's Rana Arazi. Is that correct? So you mentioned the community celebrating, Sharon mentioned before, the community celebrating festivals. How did the community celebrate festivals, and what was special about the way you all did this together?
Hello, good evening. Thank you for having me. So as Mia mentioned, our family home became known as the Villa. We moved in 2008 with my son, who was 4.5 at the time, and we would sit with the Edos and wonder, you know, whether there were any other Jews in Dubai. And soon enough, we met Mia and Bianca and Derek, and that's, you know, slowly but surely how the community grew. before the rabbis were brought out to Dubai, Simon Ida would pretty much lead all the prayers. And it was incredibly special because we'd have like five mosques surrounding us, the call of prayer with the imam's stunning voice, and Simon's beautiful voice singing the prayers. And it was just incredible. It really reminded us, you know, who we were and where we had decided to settle, even if it was for a short time. So that in itself was so, so special. But as a community, what was so incredible was that we would, we pretty much made it a tradition within our community that whoever's house we went to for the Hagim, whoever was hosting the Hagim, would bring their tradition and their roots to the table. I'm originally Iranian, brought up in London, and my husband is Lebanese, brought up in Italy. So, you know, we had such an incredible mix of families like that. You know, just on this panel itself, we've got Sharon, who's Sephardi, Ashkenazi, Simon and Mia, and then the South African contingency. And we'd all bring our traditions together, which was amazing, through our singing, through the prayers, through the food. And there was a mutual respect and understanding and a joy for learning. I, for one, although brought up in a Jewish home, we weren't extremely observant. We were traditional, but not hugely observant. And I learned more in my 10 years in Dubai than I did in my 30 years in London. Yeah, it was special, it was warm, it was kind, it was inclusive. And of course, it was very important for us because we had children. My daughter was born soon after in 2009. And it was very, very important to bring Judaism to them. No matter how, no matter what, we were determined to do it. So yes, our Hagims were extremely special.
That's so beautiful, the idea of Jewish unity and different traditions all coming together. It's a really, really beautiful concept. Michael and Martine, you were in Dubai in 2007-2020 with young children, including celebrating bat mitzvahs in Dubai, which must have been quite a challenge and quite an experience. Maybe you can describe that a little bit and what that was like.
So good morning, good evening all. Slightly lacking in coffee, we'll do our best we can. A lot of the foundation story has been laid by our friends around the virtual table. And when we arrived into Dubai in 2007, our daughters were 7 and 5. Yeah, 5. And it was really important that we had chosen to come to Dubai as economic migrants, but that they should not lose out on the sense of Yiddishkeit and Judaism. I don't consider myself an observant Jew or religious Jew because the continuum is much longer than my understanding. But what is important for me is the values of being Jewish, which education, loyalty, ethics, and many, many others. And the way, and it would be incorrect for us not to pass those on to our daughters. So because there wasn't a community to take them to on a Sunday morning, you've got to do it yourself. Obviously, I sound South African, and you don't have to do it perfectly. If you have this whole judgment thing going on in your head, you're never going to do anything. So we did the best we can, and we pulled out the books that we took with us and hid them in our, not hidden, we just discreetly took them in our luggage, and off we went, and had Pesach and had Shabbos and did everything with discretion, understanding that we were guests in an unknown land, strange in a strange land, as Heinlein would say. And when it came time for the girls to have their bat mitzvahs, there's no reason not. Now, sitting here with Zoom, it would be completely obvious. You'd get them a teacher and they would meet. And that's what we did back then. What I really want to emphasize, and there's so much more because we were there for 12 years and we watched the community evolve, grow, formalize, is that the people around this table and many more who aren't here with us, who really would love to have their voices at the table too, quietly went about being Jewish in a discreet way, sometimes taking risks. I was working for a site initially, Dubai Emirati companies and then Saudi companies. So I was never talking about our Judaism, and we taught our girls the same. And that's actually had a longer impression on them now, even at the University of Edinburgh in a supposedly tolerant society. But where I was going is that we knew that the authorities knew that we were Jewish, even though whatever it says in the forms, because Dubai is very well monitored for security reasons. I have no problem with that. That's the state it is. And because we knew that they knew and they hadn't stopped us, we knew we weren't becoming an embarrassment. We weren't overstepping any implicit lines. And so that gave us as a group confidence to be slightly adventurous, to bring in a Torah and to bring in rabbis. And the rabbi stayed at our house and then moved to Derek and Bianca. And I took them shopping, and some people looked at them like, my God, what rabbi's doing here? Others just saw ZZ Top. They were wearing baseball caps and looked like they'd stepped off a heavy metal band, but they hadn't had enough sunlight for some time. So rambling on, the whole underneath all of this was the sense that we were being tolerated, which is really important to shout out for the UAE, that yes, if you don't embarrass us, you can get on with stuff. And to the other point you made, everybody could bring whatever they wanted to the table, be it for some people on different spectrums of the poles, a little uncomfortable to accept the other person, be it customs and practices. The only question was, please, nothing unkosher and nothing inappropriate. And the rest allowed us to build this sense of community around commonality, not difference.
And I'd just like to add, going back to our daughters, because we were talking to them recently, and because we've been talking about our experience recently, I was asking them, how was it for you to be growing up with this setup? And they both said that they felt such a strong sense of belonging to the small community that we created together. And it was very heartwarming, because they said that they felt like it was a really safe space for them to just be who they were, and the extended community were like extended family. So I think that's...
Perhaps we've got some of it right.
That's really...
It's really beautiful. Wow. Bianca and Derek, maybe you can just comment in general. What was unique, special about being Jewish in Dubai? I mean, I'm Jewish in Sydney. There's a big Jewish community here. But this is definitely something very special and unique about being Jewish in such a place. Maybe you can shed some light on that.
Sure. So I think when we first told people in South Africa that we were leaving and we were moving to Dubai, we were definitely met with a lot of mixed reactions. But I think people kind of lean towards a mix of shock and horror. I remember an auntie of mine saying, when I told her we were moving to Dubai, she said, "Oh, Cookie, that's so wonderful." And then when we said, and then she phoned me back that afternoon and she said, "Oh," she said, "Cookie, I didn't know you were moving to the United Arab Emirates." So that seemed to be what people kind of thought about us moving, shock and horror. And Derek and I went to our rabbi before we went, and we were sitting in a shul service, and Rabbi Shishla turned around and said farewell to the Hershevitzers, who are going to become the unofficial shluchim of Dubai. And Derek and I looked at each other in disbelief, because we just were going to Dubai for work opportunity and nothing else. And I think for us, we felt so unworthy by not having a community, and we try to stick to our traditions as much as possible, be it just Derek and I or some single guy that we found. But what made it so amazing is that there were all these random events that kind of brought us to more people. So we were vying for a taxi one night, and we got into a taxi with a couple, and they were Scottish, and it turned out their best friend was from New York, and he was Jewish. So they put him in contact with us. When Sharon had a bris for her baby, I was actually supposed to be pregnant with a boy. So I had arranged a Mohel in South Africa. And then I phoned him and I said, actually, they got it wrong in Dubai, as they often do. And I'm having a girl and not a boy. And he said, you know, Bianca, he said, I met you for a reason and I'll be coming to Dubai for something else. You know, there was a lot of excitement around the time when we had found the other people. And when we had sat down with everybody and said, you know, we're happy to host a Yom Kippur Rosh Hashanah service in our house, it was a very scary time because, you know, you know you're doing something that is not above board. You're bringing people in that are going to stick out like a sore thumb. We weren't sure exactly how much of a sore thumb they were going to look like, but it was like hiding an elephant under a baseball cap. But there were so many special moments for us. And for me, I think my most special moment in Dubai is when the two rabbis came up to our apartment and, you know, they brought out all this paraphernalia, and it was like Mary Poppins, and she was opening up her bag, but it was a Jewish bag, and there were mezuzahs, and there were mazos, and there were, they even brought a talis for my baby at the time, and they just kept on bringing out all this Jewish paraphernalia. And then they brought out the Torah, which was a very significant event, because as far as we know, it was the first Torah in the UAE, and they put it on our dining room table. And we lived on the 32nd floor of an apartment, and we did not get a lot of sunshine. But as they started to unscroll the Torah, we had one beam of sunshine hit directly onto the table. And for me, that moment sort of solidified that you are where you're meant to be. The people that you meet, the people in your path, when an opportunity like a quick move to Dubai kind of presents itself, none of it is for no good reason or some random reason. It happens because it's beshift.
I think that's unbelievable. I just want to, before we go to the second round here and ask some other questions to our panelists, just sort of direct this to my father for a moment. You know, I think one of the things which have just stuck out here, which I've been amazed at, is the concept of, so to speak, regular people, not rabbis or, you know, renowned Torah scholars or leaders, sort of taking an active leadership role, which is very unique. It's something you don't find in most communities, because most communities have rabbis and have institutions which sort of set it up for you, but you all had to do that yourself. I was wondering if my father, Rabbi Gurari, could comment, you know, is that an ideal? Meaning, would you be put out of business if everyone started doing that? You know, if everyone started having their own services in their house What could we all in Sydney learn from that amazing initiative that these incredible people have taken?
Thank you. First of all, thank you to all our panelists, and thank you, Bianca, for organizing. It's wonderful to be with all of you tonight. So very briefly, I was listening to all of this with absolute fascination, and I just want to briefly say I thought of three things. The third is actually a challenge, because the rabbi always has to challenge people, so I'm going to challenge you. But the first thing is a sentence that we say every morning in our prayers. We say, "Hamechin mitzadei gavre," that it's God who prepares the steps of man, meaning that you think you're going to somewhere for one reason, and there's always a superficial trigger of why we go to somewhere. But the truth is that the Baal Shem Tovs explain this a lot, that when we go to somewhere, it's always for a purpose. And that purpose is always to bring Judaism there and to elevate the place, because that goes into a second concept, which we learn in Kabbalah, that when God created the world, he spread these divine sparks all over the world. And in fact, we are taught that the reason that the Jews, after the temple was destroyed, or in fact spread out throughout the whole world, is you come there, we're going to celebrate Purim in a week and a half, and there we learn the Jews were spread out in 127 provinces. Nowadays, spread even more, all the way even to Dubai, which is fascinating. And it's obviously clear that you all thought you were going there for career progress or business, whatever the case is. But the real reason, of course, was to bring holiness there and to release those sparks, right? But I think that, and this is the challenge, I can't talk to all of you in London because I don't know you, but Bianca, I'll give her the challenge. So the, and Derek, right? So the challenge is that it doesn't stop in Dubai. I'm happy to be out of business. I'm happy to be the rabbi that comes to help. This concept, you know, you said Rabbi Shishla said you were the unofficial shluchim to Dubai. I think we now have to extend that and make you official or unofficial shluchim in Sydney. So all those, now that you've all left Dubai, I suppose, again, you know, Rabbi always has to demand or urge or challenge. I would urge you to continue this. I mean, it's fascinating that this happened in Dubai, but it can and should happen everywhere. So Bianca, I think we're going to be talking about you organizing a Jewish event soon. She's ready. I see she's agreeing. No problem.
Great. Excellent. All right. I think there's one question there are many questions on my mind, but one definitely has come to mind as soon as I saw this topic, and that is the topic of anti-Semitism. So Mia, I'm going to come back to you. Understand, you know, did you tell anyone there that you were Jewish? Did you encounter anti-Semitism? Did you encounter hostility? Maybe you can comment on that.
Sure. So I told lots of people that I was Jewish. You know, I didn't wear a sign on my head or anything like that. As Michael alluded to the fact, I think most of us were, you know, we were respectful of the situation that we were in. We were quite discreet. But I did tell lots of my close non-Jewish friends. I also formed friendships with Arabs from all over the Arabic world. In fact, my ex-boss, Mohammed, was at my Orthodox Jewish wedding in London in 2017, which was a very big honor, you know, for myself and my family. He wore a kippah, you know, very respectful and so on and so forth. So I did tell some people, I did tell people that I was Jewish. I didn't tell everybody. Actually, Mohammed was one of the people that I didn't tell, and I'll explain the reason why in a moment. In terms of the question of anti-Semitism, the only anti-Semitism I ever experienced in the 3.5 years I was there was actually, I went to a party hosted by some German friends of mine. There was a big German contingency there. And one of their friends from another European country, which I won't mention the country because it's not really morally relevant, made a comment, and I overheard the comment, and I said, you've offended me, I'm Jewish, and that's an anti-Semitic remark. And my German hosts chucked this person out, you know, threw him out of the party. So that was the only time. But other than that, no, I didn't experience any other form of anti-Semitism at all. In terms of Mohammed, he was one of the people that I didn't actually tell that I was Jewish. And the reason for that is because when I first went to Dubai, I went with, I was there working for an international law firm. And as I said, when they applied for my, so I wasn't working for Mohammed at this time. And when they applied for my work visa, they put me down as being Catholic for some reason. And when I moved jobs 18 months later to work in a bank for Mohammed, you have to then reapply for your work visa and you have to put down your religion. And when I resigned to come home to London, Mohammed and I were having lunch and he said, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're Jewish, aren't you? He said, I've known this, by the way, from before I even hired, he said, I knew from the day I interviewed you. And I said, yes. And he said, well, why didn't you tell me? He said, I'm really upset that you didn't tell me. You know, he said, did you honestly think it would be a barrier to me hiring you? Because it wouldn't have been. I totally respect the fact you're Jewish. He said, I'm really upset you didn't tell me, you know. And I said, well, the reason I didn't tell you is, and I explained about the work visa, and I said, don't you think it would have seemed a little bit odd for me to have converted from Catholicism to Judaism within 18 months of living in Dubai? You know, I just said that may have seemed a bit odd, so that's why I didn't tell you. And he kind of wailed with laughter.
That is fascinating. That's a surprising answer, actually. That's good to hear. Sharon, you know, in these type of places, there's always crazy and amusing stories that happen, especially if you're Jewish. Can you maybe share with us something crazy, sort of out of the norm that happened, linked to being Jewish in Dubai?
I think when you say crazy, I think the everyday became crazy. So if I can explain, I remember going with my daughter to Borders, a bookshop, and seeing a book called Elmo and the Dreidel and messaging everyone to say, oh my gosh, they bought in this book, Elmo and the Dreidel. What does this mean? This must be a code. But equally what was amazing, and I remember Giacomo, Rana's husband, saying it, it's him saying, when have you ever gone into a synagogue and said, wow, there's a Sefer Torah? So that was amazing. Like, the small was amazing. But there were more brilliant things. So, like, when my son in 2012 had his Brit Milah, news went round very, very quickly. And we got a call literally minutes before his Brit Milah to say, from a family in Lebanon, Jewish family, to say their son needed a Brit Milah. And could we organize it? And so on the back of my son's Brit Milah, a day or so later, they brought their son and he was Brit Milah'd, which was amazing. I think also, as much as we made connections with each other, we were helped by others. So my obstetrician once asked me, are you Muslim? I think a lot of people thought I was because of my look, supposedly, but I said, no, I'm Jewish. And he was completely shocked and said, you've got to be careful and this and that. And then weeks later, he said, I know that I've got another patient who says she's German, but she's Jewish. And I think it would be really good if she could be part of your services. So I said, okay. And before long, we made contact with her and we're still in touch with her today. And she was Israeli and was keen to participate. I think as a parting shot, and just to give you an impression, what we all created was so real that when we came back to England, I remember it was Christmas time and I was walking with my daughter in a local shopping centre, and she said, why are there all these decorations? And I said, you know, it's for Christmas. And she said, yes, yes, we wouldn't have had it in Dubai because that was a Jewish country. So that was how great it was for her.
That is unbelievable. That is amazing. That's such a classic story. Rana, can you comment on what made you decide to leave? Sounds like an amazing place. I'm almost about to move there, actually. It sounds like you've almost convinced me. So what made you leave in the end?
Well, my son was 4 and a half when we moved. My daughter was born in Dubai in 2009. And we raised them in Dubai, telling them that they were Jewish, obviously, making it a very important point that they learn about their roots and their religion through our gatherings, which actually really grew quite organically. But we never told my son to not say that he was Jewish if ever asked. We told him not to, you know, go around announcing it, but we didn't tell him not to say it. We wanted him to be proud of who he was and where he came from. But gradually, as he grew up, around the age of 10, 11, when he was really becoming aware of his identity, he starts to really notice that he really was the only Jew amongst his peers. There were Hindus, there were obviously Muslims, Christians, but he was the only Jew. And even though we never experienced any anti-Semitism directly at all, we were very comfortable there. He started to feel very alone, as it were, quite isolated. And he said, you know, Mum, I just feel like I don't belong. And he's always been quite spiritual and still is. And that really sort of hit home for us. And plus he had to start learning for his bar mitzvah. So really that was a trigger for us to go. It was a sign that it was time. One thing I didn't mention previously, which I should have, was about the Sefer Torah that first full-size Sefer Torah that arrived on UAE soil that was organized by my husband Giacomo, that is still in the community today. And that's actually why it's so important to mention, because they still use it. It's known as the Red Sefer Torah. And it was geniusly brought to the UAE disguised in a golf bag by another member of the community back in 13 or 14. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But it's just a really important point to know that Sefer Torah that was brought over by our community is still being used in the community today there. I guess if we were, you know, in the UAE while as the present community is today, my son wouldn't have felt, you know, those emotions, and maybe we would still be there. But yeah, that's the main reason we left.
Wow. Michael and Martine, can you maybe comment on, and this sounds like an incredible, even though small, but incredible community. What was the key ingredient to the success of the community coming together in such an amazing way?
Okay. So I'll do the bulk and she'll add the spice. I think we've alluded to it before that we felt an obligation as parents from one generation to the next to pass on what we had been given. And Martine and I recently were out walking, and we both remember sitting in on a sermon from the late Rabbi Sacks, a gifted golden light. And it would have been before our daughters were born, we think so. Sometime early 2000s, or maybe they're children. And he was saying that he has people come to him and say, I'm so surprised that my son or daughter has chosen to leave the faith and marry out. And his point was, well, why are you surprised? What have you given them to have roots in the soil? So if you don't give them a place to feel at home, then they've got nothing to compare it to. So it's your obligation that if this happens, and please, he wasn't blaming anybody, it happens. But at least say, look, we tried. And so we remember, not having spoken to each other, this might have been a spark, and it's a beautiful spark, that this was our obligation as children of our parents and our parents' parents to pass on the same. And the way we did it was, at home, if there's anything anybody takes away from this, my request is that you make challah with your children on Friday night. That's it. Or not Friday night, obviously Friday day. Because the making of the challah is tactile for children. It's like Play-Doh that they eat. And they ingest the spirit. Literally. That could become quite blasphemous in some ways. But that's what gave the kids something to look forward to. And they wanted to play with the bread and interesting, my late mother, bless her, who moved from South Africa to New Zealand at the age of 70, I think, needed to find a challah recipe when she got to Auckland because she couldn't find a decent challah like she had back in Cape Town. So we use her recipe. So this whole long story can go on and all the anecdotes, but the point is that we really wanted our children to at least have some of what we had. There wasn't a corner Jewish community to walk down to, and there wasn't choice, so you pick it up. And I've had discussions with people more learned than me that if in the Jewish tradition there are some people who are the academics and the other people who go out and just build the house that the academics sit in. Both have a part to play, and you don't have to be an academic or a scholar to add your contribution. If your contribution is the best gefilte fish, that somebody comes to shul to eat your gefilte fish, that's perfect. Make them. That was for Bianca and Derek.
Yeah, and as Sharon mentioned, that we celebrated all the Hagim, so the onus was on us to make it happen. And and that was
Burning a shakar for the first time since I was 13.
Yeah, and because we had our daughters, the emphasis really was on, you know, educating them, but also making it fun, because, you know, we if we made it fun, then they'd want to be involved, and I think we all had a lot of fun celebrating and learning as well as a result.
So final line. So our daughters are now at the University of Edinburgh, and the older one is part of the Jewish Society, and she's made challah, 40 challahs for the community, which my mother must be really proud of.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're all in lockdown there, and being part of the Jewish Society, their focus is on making the first years feel welcome, the first year members of the JSOC. So they've been making care packages for them and Friday night dinners, takeaway Friday night dinners. And they're like the headquarters, and people come and collect their Friday night dinners from them. They've done that a few times.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow, that was incredible. Finally, just one last question here for Bianca and Derek. You know, you've lived and worked in multiple countries. You've been around quite a bit. South Africa, Singapore, Australia. What was different about being Jewish in Dubai as opposed to anywhere else? Is something you can sort of highlight there?
Sure. So something I haven't said on any of our other Zoom calls with the Dubai contingent is just how inspired this group of people make me. And I think I remember feeling that way in Dubai as well. Every Shabbat, every Chagim was just filled with such amazing people, and everyone was so heartfelt. You know, people came into the community and they gave it their all, with all their heart and all their soul. You know, I was fortunate enough that when I arrived in Singapore, there was a community to welcome me. I remember the first time I walked into the Jewish Community Center, and the Rebbetzin came and she welcomed me. And even at that point, I thought to myself, I'm going to give this community my all. You know, growing up in South Africa, I was very fortunate. I could dip in and out of different communities at any given point. Whereas in Dubai, there was no community to kind of go to, let alone dip in and out of. And as I said, it was the people that made the experience so unique. The fact that everyone had a shared vision to create some semblance of a community. And we kind of muddled along the way. You know, there's so many antidotes that haven't come up that would show you the hardship of it, the bitterness, the brittleness of living in the UAE. But what was refreshing for us was these sort of people that we kind of raised ourselves up with, and who kept on raising us to do better and be better. One of the things I do mention is it also was just so wonderful to be around people who understood you. You know, so unfortunately, I lost my father quite suddenly while we were living in Dubai, and I phoned everyone to tell them. And I remember Rana popping into our apartment, and she brought Subway sandwiches, and she said, you know, there's no way I can get you lox and bagels. So I had to bring you Subway instead. It was just that shared understanding of what was important. And as you said, you know, we were very fortunate to be able to kind of move around the world. But the experiences that sit with us the most were a friend from New York who turned around and said, I've had more Jewish experience here with you guys in Dubai than I've had in 25 or however old he was at the time, years in New York. Sorry, I've had more experiences in Dubai, Jewish experiences, than I had growing up in New York. And even though Dubai is a place that some people argue is sterile and soulless, I think we all kind of raised our neshama quite a lot living there.
Yeah, I think it was also great that we could... I think we had an opportunity to not just enrich our own lives, but other people's lives. And I can think of, I think I said, you said the New York friend of ours, I think the fact that we're able to give him those Jewish experiences, but there were so many other people that came through. I remember there was an Iranian family that came for dinner one night.
They came by a rabbi who got in touch with our rabbi.
Yes, he got in touch with our rabbi, who then told us, yeah, they're going to be passing through Dubai. They really wanted a place to go for Shabbat. So they came to us. we had an amazing night with them. They said at the end of the night, that's one of the most special Shabbats they've ever had. And I think those kinds of experiences, I just can think of another, or I can just think of another story where we arranged a minyan for someone that was in Dubai on business, a Jewish guy. I can't remember what, but he needed a minyan for something. And we basically pulled troops together, and we got 10 guys together. And we had, I think it was Simon and Sharon's apartment from what I remember. But it was quite, so we met them, I think we met there around 7 p.m. is the time we arranged. And we were all sitting there chatting and waiting. And I can't remember exactly how long it took, but it took quite a long time. Eventually the guy arrived about an hour and a half later. And he said, he came with a couple of one or two work colleagues of his who weren't Jewish. They sat down and they went, okay, guys, let's do our minyan now. So we said the brachot, and it was just those kinds of experiences that we were the ones that were able to provide those experiences to other people as well.
And just to add to what Derek said, as well as what Michael said, I think what it gave all of us is that we really were a do-it-yourself community. Even if we weren't the scholars, even if we weren't the rabbis, even if we weren't the most intelligent or whatever it may be, everyone kind of clubbed together the best way that they knew how, and everyone had something to give. And I think that's it.
Amazing. It's true. This was truly inspiring. I want to just end off with one more question to my father, because I have to drive him crazy. It's my job. Something that Michael said that really struck me deeply as a young father bringing up children. You said that the most important thing is to bake challah with your children Friday morning, and I think, you know, I think challah is an example. I think it's a very deep thing which you said, that Judaism really happen in the home. You know, we go to shul every Shabbos, hopefully, if we can, and we send our kids to Jewish schools if we can. But maybe, Tati, if you can comment on the home being the center of Jewish life.
Yes, I was thinking exactly the same thing as Michael was saying there too. So I just want to say, first of all, I'm actually completely blown away by this. I think this is the most amazing presentation I've had, and I'm just really inspired. I think we should all be inspired. So I'm just going to share with you a couple of takeaways. First of all, let's go back to this point. So, you know, I often do parenting. You know, I do parenting sessions for different aspects of parenting. Sometimes people ask me to do parenting workshops specifically about instilling Judaism. So I always tell a story about, there was a great rabbi in New York who said the following. He said, you know, when the Jews came to America, things were very tough, and Shabbos was almost non-existent, and they lost the Shabbos. And he said, nowadays in New York, he said, we've got the Shabbos back, but, he said, we didn't get the Friday back. And he was bemoaning the fact that people, you know, New York, it's just so easy to go and buy. You can buy today, you can buy challah, fish, cholent you could even buy. In Israel, you can buy cholent ready-made, you just have to warm it up, right? That almost, you don't put in the preparation, you don't engage with the experience by preparing for it. And he wanted to encourage people. He said, it's not just the Shabbos, but the Friday is so important. So I think what Michael said about the gefilte fish is so amazingly correct. And we should all be inspired by that. We should get involved in Jewish thing, not just robotically doing the act, making the kids for a night, but preparing for it, talking about it, getting excited about it, not only in Dubai, but everywhere. And I think that's key. And it's key to education, but it's key for ourselves as well. And the other thing that I really was reflecting on and just remembering while you were all talking, and I want to, you know, I challenged you before, that I'm going to challenge everyone else now. And I think I'm going to challenge myself and challenge everyone, because I think this is really the point. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe once said, he said that every Jew has an obligation not just to learn themselves, but to teach others. And he said, not everyone's a scholar, not everyone's a rabbi, but he said, and he gave an example using the Hebrew alphabet. And he said, those who know an aleph and haven't even learned the bet, now have an obligation or responsibility to teach the aleph to someone who doesn't even know the aleph yet. Right? And I think that's something that's, you've shown, I'm sure you know much more than the aleph, but I'm just saying the concept. You've just shown in the most amazing way. But I think it's not just a nice story. I think we should all take inspiration from that we should all continue to learn ourselves. And I think our own personal growth generally and in Judaism specifically is critically important. But I think the inspiration we can take away from this is that we should never keep it to ourselves, no matter where we are. And we should take whatever we have and share it with others, because it has that ripple effect. It's inspired people in such a beautiful way in Dubai, where you kind of had to do it because there was no other choice. But I think everywhere else, we need to make a conscious choice to do that and to inspire the people. And if we inspire each other, the excitement just has that amazing ripple effect and just grows in an amazing, amazing way. So I've taken that away, maybe even more than I had it till now. But, again, I encourage everyone to take that. That's such an important point. And I think you've taught that, not by formally teaching it, but just telling your story in the most amazing way. It's really beautiful. And I think that's one of the takeaways for me, at least. I'm trying to see if there's any... I see there's some comments in the chat here.
I think it's been answered.
Okay, it's been all good. Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. And thank you so much to all the panelists. This was really, this was truly inspiring, really. I thank you so much for sharing your story. And it's wishing you all much success and bracha and all good things for you and your families.
Thank also, those that are in London, those that are in England, we want to just wish you a speedy exit from the lockdown and safety.
Thank you. We need it.
I do acknowledge that we are living here in Sydney in a completely different planet, but we have to also remember where you are and just wish you well and just back to normal life as soon as you possibly can and keep inspiring other people. It's been truly amazing.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Yes, and thank you.
Thank you very much for having
us. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you, folks, for all your good words. Wishing you lots of mazel and happiness.
Amen. Amen. Good night, everyone. Have a good night and a good week.